Hey, sweetheart, we're continuing chapter 6 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. So they just had breakfast on the first day of class, I think. The journey through the castle to the North Tower was a long one. 2 years at Hogwarts hadn't taught them everything about the castle, and they'd never been inside the North Tower before. "There's got to be a shortcut," Ron panted as they climbed their 7th long staircase and emerged on an unfamiliar landing, where there was nothing but a large painting of a bare stretch of grass hanging on the stone wall. "I think it's this way," said Hermione, peering down the empty passage to the right. "Can't be," said Ron. "That's south. Look, you can see a bit of the lake out the window." Harry was watching the painting. A fat, dapple gray pony had just ambled onto the grass and was grazing nonchalantly. Harry was used to the subjects of Hogwarts paintings moving around and leaving their frames to visit one another, but he always enjoyed watching it. A moment later, a short, squat knight in a suit of armor clanked into the picture after his pony. By the look of the grass stains on his metal knees, he had just fallen off. "Aha!" he yelled, seeing Harry, Ron, and Hermione. "What villains are these that trespass on my private lands? Come to scorn at my fall, perchance. Draw, you knaves, you dogs." They watched in astonishment as the little knight tugged his sword out of its scabbard and began brandishing it violently, hopping up and down in rage. But the sword was too long for him. A particularly wild swing made him overbalance, and he landed face down in the grass. "Are you all right?" said Harry, moving closer to the picture. "Get back, you scurvy braggart! Back, you rogue!" The knight seized his sword again and used it to push himself back up, but the blade sank deeply into the grass, and though he pulled with all his might, he couldn't get it out. Finally, he had to flop down back on the grass and push up his visor to mop his sweating face. "Listen," said Harry, taking advantage of the knight's exhaustion. "We're looking for North Tower. You don't know the way, do you?" "A quest!" The knight's rage seemed to vanish instantly. He clanked to his feet and shouted, "Come, follow me, dear friends, and we shall find our goal, or else shall perish bravely in this charge." He gave the sword another fruitless tug, tried and failed to mount the fat pony, gave up, and cried, "On foot, then, good sirs and gentle lady, on, on!" And he ran, clanking loudly into the left side of the frame and out of sight. They hurried after him along the corridor, following the sound of his armor. Every now and then, they spotted him running through a picture ahead. "Be of stout heart. The worst is yet to come," yelled the knight. And they saw him reappear in front of an alarmed group of women in crinolines, whose picture hung on a wall of a narrow spiral staircase. Puffing loudly, Harry, Ron, and Hermione climbed the tightly spiraling steps, getting dizzier and dizzier, until at last they heard the murmurs of voices above them, and they knew they'd reached the classroom. "Farewell!" cried the knight, popping his head into a painting of some sinister-looking monks. "Farewell, my comrade-in-arms! If you ever have need of noble heart and steely sinew, call upon Sir Cadogan." "Yeah, we'll call you," muttered Ron as the knight disappeared. "If we ever need someone mental..." They climbed the last few steps and emerged onto a tiny landing where most of the class was already assembled. There were no doors off this landing, but Ron nudged Harry and pointed at the ceiling, where there was a circular trapdoor with a brass plaque on it. "Sybil Trelawney, divination teacher," Harry read. "How are we supposed to get up there?" As though in answer to his question, the trapdoor suddenly opened and a silvery ladder descended right at Harry's feet. Everyone got quiet. "After you," said Ron, grinning, so Harry climbed the ladder first. He emerged into the strangest-looking classroom he'd ever seen. In fact, it didn't look like a classroom at all, more like a cross between someone's attic and an old-fashioned tea shop. At least 20 small circular tables were crammed inside it, all surrounded by chintz armchairs and fat little poofs. Everything was lit with a dim crimson light, the curtains at the windows were all closed, and the many lamps were draped with dark red scarves. It was stiflingly warm, and the fire that was burning under the crowded mantelpiece was giving off a heavy, sickly sort of perfume as it heated a large copper kettle. The shelves running around the circular walls were crammed with dusty-looking feathers, stubs of candles, many packs of tattered playing cards, countless silvery crystal balls, and a huge array of teacups. Ron appeared at Harry's shoulders as the class assembled all around them, all talking in whispers. "Where is she?" Ron said. A voice came suddenly out of the shadows, a soft, misty sort of voice. "Welcome," it said. "How nice to see you in the physical world at last." Harry's immediate impression was of a large, glittering insect. Professor Trelawney moved into the firelight, and they saw that she was very thin. Her large glasses magnified her eyes to several times their natural size, and she was draped in a gauzy, spangled shawl. Innumerable chains and beads hung around her spindly neck, and her arms and hands were encrusted with bangles and rings. "Sit, my children, sit," she said, and they all climbed awkwardly into armchairs or sank onto poofs. Harry, Ron, and Hermione sat themselves around the same round table. "Welcome to divination," said Professor Trelawney, who had seated herself in a winged armchair in front of the fire. "My name is Professor Trelawney. You may not have seen me before. I find that descending too often to the hustle and bustle of the main school clouds my inner eye." Nobody said anything to this extraordinary pronouncement. Professor Trelawney delicately rearranged her shawl and continued. "So you have chosen to study divination, the most difficult of all magical arts. I must warn you at the outset that if you do not have the sight, there is very little I will be able to teach you. Books can only take you so far in this field." At those words, both Harry and Ron glanced, grinning, at Hermione, who looked startled at the news that books wouldn't be much help in the subject. "Many witches and wizards, talented though they are in the area of loud bangs and smells and sudden disappearings, are yet unable to penetrate the veiled mysteries of the future," Professor Trelawney went on, her enormous gleaming eyes moving from face to nervous face. "It is a gift granted to few. You, boy," she said suddenly to Neville, who almost toppled off his poof, "is your grandmother well?"
"I think so," said Neville tremulously.
"I wouldn't be so sure if I were you, dear," said Professor Trelawney, the firelight glinting on her long emerald earrings. Neville gulped. Professor Trelawney continued placidly. "We will be covering the basic methods of divination this year. The first term will be devoted to the reading of tea leaves. Next term we shall progress to palmistry. By the way, my dear," she said, shot suddenly at Parvati Patil, "beware a red-haired man."
Parvati gave a startled look at Ron, who was right behind her, and edged her chair away from him.
"In the second term," Professor Trelawney went on, "we shall progress to the crystal ball, if we have finished with the fire omens, that is. Unfortunately, classes will be disrupted in February by a nasty bout of flu. I myself will lose my voice. And around Easter, one of our number will leave us forever."
A very tense silence followed this pronouncement, but Professor Trelawney seemed unaware of it.
"I wonder, dear," she said to Lavender Brown, who was nearest and shrank back in her chair, "if you could pass me the largest silver teapot."
Lavender, looking relieved, stood up and took an enormous teapot from the shelf and put it on the table in front of Professor Trelawney.
"Thank you, my dear. Incidentally, the thing you are dreading, it will happen on Friday, the 16th of October."
Lavender trembled.
"Now, I want you all to divide into pairs. Collect a teacup from the shelf. Come to me and I will fill it. Then sit down and drink. Drink until only the dregs remain. Swirl these around in the cup 3 times with the left hand. Then turn the cup upside down on its saucer. Wait for the last of the tea to drain away. Then give your cup to your partner to read. You will interpret the patterns using pages 5 and 6 of Unfogging the Future. I shall move among you, helping and instructing. Oh, and dear, she caught Neville by the arm as he attempted to stand up. After you've broken your first cup, would you be so kind as to select one of the blue patterned ones? I'm rather attached to the pink.
Sure enough, Neville had no sooner reached the shelf of teacups when there was a tinkle of breaking china. Professor Trelawney swept to him, holding a dustpan and broom and brush, and said, "One of the blue ones, then, dear, if you wouldn't mind. Thank you." When Harry and Ron had their teacups filled, they went back to the table and tried to drink the scalding tea quickly. They swilled the dregs around as Professor Trelawney had instructed, and then drained the cups and swapped. "Right," said Ron, as they both opened their books at pages 5 and 6. "What can you see in mine?" "A load of soggy brown stuff," said Harry. The heavily perfumed smoke in the room was making him feel sleepy and stupid.
"Broaden your minds, my dears, and allow your eyes to see past the mundane,"
Professor Trelawney cried through the gloom. Harry tried to pull himself together.
"Right. You've got a crooked sort of cross," he consulted, unfogging the future. "That means you're going to have trials and sufferings. Sorry about that. There's a thing that could be the sun. Hang on. That means great happiness. So you've got to suffer, but you'd be very happy."
"You need your inner eye tested, if you ask me," said Ron, and they both had to stifle their laughs as Professor Trelawney gazed in their directions.
"My turn." Ron peered into Harry's teacup, his forehead wrinkled with effort. "There's a blob a bit like a bowler hat," he said. "Maybe you're going to work for the Ministry of Magic."
He turned the teacup the other way.
"But this way it looks more like an acorn. What's that?"
He scanned his copy of Unfogging the Future. "A wild, unexpected gold. Excellent, you can lend me some. And there's a thing here." He turned the cup again. "That sort of looks like an animal. Yeah, if that was its head. Looks like a hippo. No, a sheep." Professor Trelawney whirled around as Harry let out a snort of laughter.
"Let me see that, my dear," she said reprovingly to Ron, sweeping over and snatching Harry's cup from him.
Everyone went quiet and watched. Professor Trelawney was staring into the teacup, rotating it clockwise.
"The falcon, my dear, you have a deadly enemy."
"But everyone knows that," said Hermione in a loud whisper. Professor Trelawney stared at her.
"Well, they do," said Hermione. "Everyone knows about Harry and you-know-who."
Harry and Ron stared at her with a mixture of amazement and admiration. They had never heard Hermione speak to a teacher like that before. Professor Trelawney chose not to reply. She lowered her huge eyes to Harry's cup again and continued to turn it.
"The club, an attack. Dear, dear, this is not a happy cup."
"I thought it was a bowler hat," said Ron sheepishly.
"The skull, danger in your path, my dear."
Everyone was staring, transfixed, at Professor Trelawney, who gave the cup a final turn, gasped, and then screamed. There was another tinkle of breaking china. Neville had smashed his second cup. Professor Trelawney sank into a vacant armchair, her glittering hand at her heart and her eyes closed.
"My dear boy, my poor dear boy, no. It is kinder not to say no. Don't ask me."
"What is it, Professor?" said Dean Thomas at once. Everyone had got to their feet, and slowly they crowded around Harry and Ron's table, pressing close to Professor Trelawney's chair to get a good look at Harry's cup.
"My dear," said Professor Trelawney's huge eyes, said Professor Trelawney, as her huge eyes opened dramatically. "You have the grim."
"The what?" said Harry. He could tell that he wasn't the only one who didn't understand. Dean Thomas shrugged at him, and Lavender Brown looked puzzled. But nearly everybody else clapped their hands to their mouths in horror.
"The grim, my dear, the grim,"
cried Professor Trelawney, who looked shocked that Harry didn't understand.
"The giant spectral dog that haunts churchyards." "My dear boy, it is an omen. The worst omen. Of death!"
Or something like that. However she would do this, you know. Harry's stomach lurched. That dog on the cover of Death Omens in Flourish and Blots. The dog in the shadows of Magnolia Crescent.
Lavender Brown clapped her hands to her mouth, too. Everyone was looking at Harry. Everyone except Hermione, who had gotten up and moved around to the back of Professor Trelawney's chair. "I don't think it looks like a grim," she said flatly. Professor Trelawney surveyed Hermione with mounting dislike. "You'll forgive me for saying so, my dear, but I perceive very little aura around you. Very little receptivity to the resonances of the future."
Seamus Finnegan was tilting his head from side to side. "It looks like a grim if you do this," he said, with his eyes almost shut. "It looks more like a donkey from here," he said, leaning to the left. "When you've all finished deciding whether or not I'm going to die," said Harry, taking him even himself by surprise. Now no one seemed to want to look at him.
"I think we'll leave the lesson for today," said Professor Trelawney in her mistiest voice. "Yes, please pack away your things."
Silently, the class took their teacups back to Professor Trelawney, packing away their books and closed their bags. Even Ron was avoiding Harry's eyes.
"Until we meet again," said Professor Trelawney faintly, "fair fortune be yours." "Oh, and dear," she pointed at Neville, "you'll be late next time. So mind you, work extra hard to catch up."
Harry, Ron, and Hermione descended Professor Trelawney's ladder and the winding stair in silence, and then set off for Professor McGonagall's transfiguration class. It took them so long to find her classroom that, early as they left the divination, they were only just in time. Should we stop? Hang on. Okay. Yeah. Harry chose a seat at the back of the room, feeling as though he was sitting in a very bright spotlight. The rest of the class kept shooting furtive glances at him as though he were to drop dead at any moment. He hardly heard what Professor McGonagall was telling them about animagi, wizards who could transform at will into animals, and wasn't even watching when she transformed herself in front of their eyes into a tabby cat with spectacle markings around her eyes.
"Really, what has gotten into you all today?" said Professor McGonagall, turning herself back with a faint pop, and staring all around them. "Not that it matters, but that's the first time my transformation's not got any applause from a class."
Everybody's head turned towards Harry again, but nobody spoke. Then Hermione raised her hand.
"Please, Professor, we've just had our first divination class, and we were reading the tea leaves, and..."
"Ah, of course," said Professor McGonagall, suddenly frowning. "There's no need to say any more, Miss Granger. Tell me, which of you will be dying this year?" Everyone stared at her.
"Me," said Harry finally.
"I see," said Professor McGonagall, fixing Harry with her beady eyes. "Then you should know, Potter, that Sybil Trelawney has predicted the death of one student a year since she has arrived at the school. None of them has yet died. Seeing death omens is her favorite way of greeting a new class. If it were not for the fact that I never speak ill of colleagues..." Professor McGonagall broke off, but they saw that her nostrils had gone white. She went on more calmly. "Divination is one of the most imprecise of magic. I shall not conceal from you that I have very little patience with it. True seers are very rare, and Professor Trelawney..." She stopped again, and then said, in a very matter-of-fact tone, "You look in excellent health, Potter, so will you excuse me if I don't let you off homework today? I assure you that if you die, you need not hand it in." Hermione laughed. Harry felt a bit better. It was harder to feel scared of a lump of tea leaves away from the dim red light and befuddling perfume of Professor Trelawney's classroom. Not everyone was convinced, however. Ron still looked worried, and Lavender whispered, "But what about Neville's cup?" When Transfiguration class had finished, they joined the crowd thundering toward the Great Hall. Okay. "Ron, cheer up," said Hermione, pushing a dish of stew toward him. "You heard what Professor McGonagall said." Ron spooned stew onto his plate and picked up his fork, but didn't start. "Harry," he said in a low, serious voice, "you haven't seen a black dog anywhere, have you?"
"Yeah, I have," said Harry. "I saw one the night I left the Dursleys."
Ron let his fork fall with a clatter.
"Probably a stray," said Hermione calmly.
Ron looked at Hermione as though she'd gone mad. "Hermione, if Harry's seen a Grim, that's bad," he said. My Uncle Bilious saw one, and he died 24 hours later." "Coincidence," said Hermione airily, pouring herself some pumpkin juice. "You don't know what you're talking about," said Ron, starting to get angry. "Grims scare the living daylights out of most wizards." "There you are, then," said Hermione in a superior tone. "They see the Grim and die of fright. The Grim's not an omen, it's the cause of death. And Harry's still with us because he's not stupid enough to see one and think right well. I'd better kick the bucket, then." Ron mouthed wordlessly at Hermione, who opened her bag, took out her new arithmancy book, and propped it open against the fruit jug. "I think divination seems very woolly," she said, searching for her page. "A lot of guesswork, if you ask me." "There was nothing woolly about the Grim in that cup," said Ron hotly. "You didn't seem so confident when you were telling Harry it was a sheep," said Hermione coolly. "Professor Trelawney said you didn't have the right aura," Ron said. "You just don't like being bad at something for a change." He had touched a nerve. Hermione slammed her arithmancy book down on the table so hard that bits of meat and carrot flew everywhere. "If being good at divination means I'll have to pretend to see death omens in a lump of tea leaves, I'm not sure I'll be studying it much longer. That lesson was absolute rubbish compared with my arithmancy class." She snatched up her bag and stalked away. Ron frowned after her. "What's she talking about?" he said to Harry. "She hasn't been to arithmancy class yet." And I think we'll stop there. We still have another section left of chapter 6. Because this lady writes long, long chapters. But that's okay. We can just break them up into pieces.
I hope you like that, my boo. I miss you so much already, but I'll see you in just a couple days already. So I can't wait. I love you so much, sweetie. You're such a cutie. I miss you. I love you, boo. Good night.